How's it going, everybody, and welcome to Wrestling Observer Radio on this Saturday, September 6, 2014. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined by Dave Meltzer. And Dave, how are you this evening?
I'm doing really good.
Very interesting evening.
There's a lot of stuff's happened today. It feels like it's been 2 days already.
There's been a lot of pro wrestling stuff happening, and it's not even in pro wrestling, some of it.
No, I know.
But to lead off the top, you know, there's going to be somebody in WWE that is going, see, we told you it was always going to be on Friday, but... No.
They told me... Okay, they told me that it was, what's the word I'm looking for? They never said it was going to be on a Thursday. They just said that it was in play. But there were people, that was the official word, but there were people in the company that said that it was Thursday, and obviously they painted the buses, and Sci-Fi made the schedule, which they were on Thursday. In fact, I don't know if it's still up to right now as we're speaking, but long after when I first heard that it was going to Friday, it was staying on Friday, hours later, I just checked to see the Sci-Fi website. I mean, at that time I checked and it still said it was going to be on Thursday and it still was there. And what I guess it was is, what's the show, Galactica? Was that the show?
Did they have a Battlestar Galactica, a new one? I have no idea.
God, I'm trying to remember the name of the show. Hold on. I got it somewhere. Galactica is a different show. Spartacus was originally going to be on Friday night in the SmackDown time slot from 8 to 10. And then for whatever reason, and I don't know what it was, the decision was made, and it was probably, yesterday or the day before, but it was just made that they decided that they would go with that at 9 to 11 on Thursdays, and they would move Haven to 8 from 10 on Thursday, and that put SmackDown back to where it was. I don't know the reasoning behind the change in plans, but if you look on the Sci-Fi website, they still have the old schedule, so you can see that was the idea. And I think for wrestling and for WWE, I think that it's not good news. I think the show would have been a lot stronger on Thursday. Without a doubt, it would have been stronger on Thursday, more viewers and everything like that. It was a Sci-Fi decision as far as why. I don't know. I mean, they'd already made the decision one way, and then they changed their minds.
Well, I guess Thursday has always been a historically good TV day. Obviously, there was like the NBC heyday in the 80s with the sitcoms and things like that. But it seems to be Thursday.
Thursday's the number one day for TV ads because of the movie business. They do the heavy Thursday advertising because the movie the Friday opens. So
now, is there a blessing, do you believe, wrapped in this? Just because obviously football is not only on the NFL Network this year, it is moving over to CBS as far as that Thursday schedule goes. Even though I believe, and I think everybody believes, including WWE, Thursday is the better day. Short term, do you think this is, okay in the fact that they're not going head up against football?
It is what it is. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. It's what it is. I think that that Thursday eventually would be up. When they moved from Thursday to Friday, it cost them 20% that they never got back, 20% of viewers. Going back, do you get those 20% back? Probably not, but probably you'll get close to that. So let's say you get 15% back and football costs you 10 for 3 months. You're still ahead, and then but then once football ends, you're way up. So, I mean, it's definitely the better night for WWE. For Sci-Fi, it's the better night as well, because you get your most popular show, instead of doing, say, a 1.9 rating, it does a, 2.3 rating, 2.2, 2.3 rating, that helps your weekly average. So, there's the ad rate situation. I don't know what kind of ad rates the Spartacus shows gets. I don't even know what kind of ratings it gets. I just know it's not close to SmackDown. So,
And Haven, I guess Haven is Haven their second biggest show, or it's got to be up there, right?
Haven's one of their most popular shows. But one of the things they always liked about Haven was the pro wrestling lead-in, because Edge is on Haven, so it was always a big help to that show. So now at 8 o'clock on a Thursday, it doesn't have that benefit. So even if it was like one of their higher rated shows, you know, again, I mean, pro wrestling fans don't notoriously stick around for other programming. Very few shows that have followed wrestling have had very beneficial numbers from following it. Obviously, you know, Ultimate Fighter is one of the exceptions to that rule. You know, La Femme Nikita was actually an exception to that rule as well in a different era. But generally speaking, there isn't much of a carryover. I don't know. I know Haven probably got some, so it's probably going to, you know, but Haven, you know, for Haven, it's better to be, you know, Thursday at 8 compared to Friday at 10. Probably Thursday at 8 is better. But, you know, their idea for Haven originally was Thursday at 10, which is probably better than which is no doubt better than Thursday at 8 or Friday at 10. So, you know, they're getting hurt a little bit too. But that's, like I said, that's a sci-fi decision. I'm sure if WWE had its way, it wasn't the decision they would make. But they're not...
Off the top of your head, how many million viewers does SmackDown get on Friday?
Well, SmackDown, you know, SmackDown's between 2.4 and 2.8 million.
Okay, because Haven, I just saw a thing here. Haven Season 4 had averaged 2.3 million weekly coming in after SmackDown.
That's a pretty damn good number.
That's incredibly great retention.
That's a pretty damn great number.
If it is retention.
Because SmackDown, I mean, I'm not SmackDown. Sci-Fi on average is probably 700,000, give or take. No. They're a little higher. They're probably about 900,000. Probably about 900,000 in average in primetime. So both of these shows are way above the primetime average.
So that's probably the biggest thing coming out of the WWE today. I guess, anything more on that, or do you want to transfer over to some different type of pro wrestling that took place on Spike TV?
Yeah, we should talk about the pro wrestling on Spike TV tonight between Tito Ortiz and Stephen Bonner. That was a trip. But, you know, it's like... Okay, it was bad, and it was embarrassing, okay? Having said that, I don't know that it was ineffective. I believe in the end that as much as people will hate it, and I didn't particularly like it, and in fact, I was even cringing during it. I don't want that in MMA, but when you're number two, you sometimes have to do things, and I do think that, like, you know, look, they're going head-to-head with a UFC show. You know what I mean? They need something. And I don't know that that's it, but I guarantee you more people are talking
the
about
the purple
that.
Haze coming out of the water.
it was different. I don't know. I don't think that it's good. Because, again, like stuff like that, if you do it once a year, I think it actually is pretty effective. And even in this case for Bellator, it's probably something. But
with because of who's involved with Tito Ortiz, do you almost give them a promotional pass because this is what you're going to expect, or this is what people in a way want out of Tito Ortiz?
No.
This type of shit.
I don't really give them no. You know what? I don't think anyone wants like. You can contrive feuds to a degree, and everyone does it. It's been done for 100 years and longer. And you can cut promos on each other to a degree, but you've got to keep it within the realm of believability. And I don't believe that I think this crossed over. I kind of got the idea of, you know, the mask guy and everything. I thought that there was sort of cleverness there. But in the end, when they unmasked him and nobody knew... So we'll talk about this, because a lot of people probably didn't even see this. So Tito Ortiz, or Stephen Bonner is out there cutting a promo on Tito. And Stephen's been doing this stuff on Twitter for, you know, for days, ever since he signed. And they announced, Scott Coker comes in there, and he announced that Stephen Bonner and Tito Ortiz will be fighting on November the 15th, which is head-to-head with the UFC pay-per-view. And it'll be in Valley View Casino Arena, the old San Diego sports arena. So in San Diego, obviously. And so he's cutting his promo, and he's got a guy with a frickin' mask on dressed like Kendo Nagasaki, you know, the old, you know, Kendo Nagasaki mask. So he's talking about Tito, and I don't even remember what he's saying, honestly. It's a pro wrestling promo. And you know, very much a pro wrestling promo. And then Tito comes out, and then he unmasks the guy in front of Tito. And I guess it's Justin McCauley, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I didn't even know, you know.
Well, here's the whole thing.
Nobody knew, and he was never identified. So Justin McCauley, so for those of you who don't know, to fill in the blanks, Justin McCauley has been friends with Tito for 10 years or more. Justin McCauley is an old pro wrestler who's also done MMA. He was in UFC years ago. You know, he was used to work for, you know, in some Inoki groups and everything. He wrestled in Japan.
Well, see, back in the days where it was, was it Matt Gaffari? Was he in with them too at that time?
He probably was in with, you know, he worked other promotions too. When he was with New Japan, you know, he actually would team with China a lot. When they had that, remember that horrible period where they tried to put
Chono thing? Yes.
China against Chono feud. Yeah. China went over Tanahashi once. Isn't that a freaking disgrace?
Yes.
You know, for those of you
this is true, people.
Wondering why New Japan, you know, they blame MMA for New Japan's downfall. It's like, there's plenty of reasons besides MMA that New Japan had a downfall, and it was Inoki's booking. But, he unmasked Justin McCauley, who's Tito's old friend, and he's explaining how, you know, nobody likes you, Tito. Because he goes in, that's right. He goes to the crowd and just goes, are any of you Tito Ortiz fans? And a lot of people boo and a few people cheer. And he goes, well, no one's a Tito Ortiz fan that actually knows Tito Ortiz. You know, so he goes, like, even the people who, you know, who were friends with him, they can't stand him. He's self-absorbed. He's made up some remark about the only thing bigger than Tito's head is his ego or something. I don't know. He was made some remarks. He unmasks the guy. It's Justin McCauley. Tito goes, well, you're both drug addicts. You know, that's a great line there.
That's what you want.
Wonderful line. And, you know, they have a pull-apart brawl.
You got a Jenna Jameson reference in there.
What did Bonner said something about? What did he say about Jenna?
I forget what it was.
He
it
said
was,
something about,
I didn't
about Jenna, who's Tito's ex-girlfriend. And then Tito goes, you know, you're bringing personal life into this. You know, like that. You know, so they do the pull-apart. It was pretty weird. But, you know, it'll get people talking, and
that was the whole thing on Twitter, because there, I mean, and there was a lot of this with Bellator tonight. Obviously, Bobby Lashley, who's the TNA heavyweight champion, was on there, and he was promoted with pro wrestling. And there are people,
It's so weird watching Bobby, you know, like, you're watching an MMA fight, and they're promoting the next guy, and you're seeing spears and power slams.
Yeah, it's... Like, it was, only thing he was missing was a Takata vertical suplex.
Yeah, but I mean, like the highlights of Bobby Lashley were, they did have some clips, I guess, from his fight with James Thompson in India. But almost all the clips they showed of Bobby Lashley were professional wrestling clips from TNA.
Yeah, I don't understand. Sometimes it's one of those times where it's like, do some fake training footage where, you know, it's just simulated where you can use that.
They showed some of them. They did show some training footage of him too.
So. I'm surprised they went that heavy with pro wrestling, which at the time I didn't realize what was going to be coming up in the show, and I didn't see much of this show because I was watching the UFC show. But I mean, the sports entertainment spin on the evening. And I don't know what Bjorn Rebney is thinking right now, but as far as, you know, getting people talking and buzzing on Twitter and things like that, I'm guessing Scott Coker did his job.
Okay, here's the thing. It got people talking. All right. And a lot of the talk was negative.
But they knew it was on.
Okay. Does that translate to getting people to watch on that show? I think it actually does in this instance. But here's the thing. You don't want to do it again. Because if you do it again, you know, it's like you can only do this. Like John Jones and Daniel Cormier, that thing was fantastic. One of the things that was real. I mean, a lot of people think it was fake, but that was real, and it looked real. This one, you know, it did not look real at all, and I don't think it was, but it was the same thing, the same type of a pull apart. You can do it, but if you do it too much, you know, it's not good. If you do it every
night... I was going to say, I just think after the pay-per-view and to debut the show, I think, yes, to continue to do it after this, or if this is what's going to be the focus or this type of corniness in there, the worm's going to turn, I would believe, especially going head up with the UFC.
Yeah, but they're going head up with the UFC. I don't know why they picked that day to go head up. You know, like, I mean, I know that there's probably no November. I don't think there's any Saturdays in November they had clean, so there was always something. But they're going against the toughest, you know, UFC's best show of November. You know, they could have gone a week earlier or a week later, but that was their last week of the season.
Show for people who don't know
what.
Which is the Mexico City show for people who don't know. It's UFC 180.
Cain Velasquez and Fabricio Verdum, which really, you know, honestly isn't that big of a show. I mean, it's big. It's big in the sense it's Mexico, the debut, and it's in that there's a story that's big. But as far as like if you really look at the lineup, I mean, you know, Cain and Verdum is not this giant blockbuster, but it's still the biggest match of November.
Oh, that's it. Well, you're looking at the last couple of shows and what's coming up. I mean, with what's on there, you know, it's almost by default that because they're going to Mexico City and there's going to be a lot of, I would assume, media drummed up around it. It may be artificial, but it is, or inflated at least, but it is going to be the biggest show until we get into, you know, Wyman Belfort and really mostly Jones and Cormier.
Yeah, no, it'll be like between July and December. This will be the biggest show because this will be, you know, obviously it's going to be last Saturday. And then the next week's, next month's pay-per-view is, it'll beat that easily. And then the one after that is Aldo Mendez and it'll beat that easily. So yeah, it'll be, you know, whatever the number is, you know, but it's not a blockbuster, but it's still UFC's biggest show over a, you know, several month period. And you're going head to head with your thing, but you're on free TV. I mean, look, tonight's going to teach us a lot anyway, and I don't know what the lessons are going to be. I really am, you know, very curious about the quarter hours and the minute by minute and things like that, because we're going to see, did people stick with one show or did they go back and forth?
Yeah, I was wondering that. The first time was after Lashley. I really wanted to know what it was. And also, I was late to getting back to watching, you know, that pull apart happen because I was watching the UFC. I was wondering what that was going to be as well.
You know what's funny is, and you know what, it's here's the weirdest thing, okay? Like, my DirecTV, it's like I can only DVR two shows at once, but if I DVR another show, it kicks me off. So they actually have a thing on DirecTV, and I don't know the station. I've just, like, it's like popped up every now and then when I push the wrong buttons. But I think it might be $9.99 or 001. I'll actually find out. But it tells you, like it gives you like what people on the whole DirecTV, who's watching what. So, I mean, it doesn't give you any numbers, but it gives you rankings. So if I looked up sports, I would see it gives you the top five sports shows at that moment from that very minute. So it's actually very, I mean, I never use it, but it's a tool you could use. And actually when I saw, I think it was when I saw your tweet, during the commercial break after the Lashley fight, where it was like, you know what? I actually can find something out. But the problem is that because I was DVRing both the both shows, the UFC and the Bellator, when I tried to switch to another channel, what it did was it artificially kicked me off of the UFC, which was the one I was missing. So I just had to go back and redo the thing, and then I realized, well, it won't let me watch it. So it's like, but there is a tool for those of you who want to know. I mean, that you can look on DirecTV and it'll tell you like the top five shows, and you could and you can look up different categories, and sports is one of the categories, and you can see. And I'm sure that, you know, I mean, I don't know what else was on ESPN or whatever, but I'm sure that the Bellator and the UFC, as far as sports shows going on at that moment, would probably be like, you know, one and two, unless they consider SmackDown. You know, if they consider SmackDown a sports show, obviously that's probably beating both of them. But it would be, you know, so you could see. You know, but it, again, it doesn't give you a number, like as far as like, because I'm just curious, did people switch during the show from UFC to Bellator and back and forth based on who was on the air? And I don't know the answer to that, but it will tell us if there are MMA, you know, what percentage are MMA fans and what percentage are UFC fans. If the UFC fans just watched for the whole 4 hours and never switched for the most part, you know, that'll tell something. The people were switching back and forth. That'll tell you something. I mean, the one thing is the UFC main events went unopposed. Bellator main event did not, unless you're on the West Coast where you get the tape delay thing. So,
and if I'm not mistaken, when you match up the Pitbull Curran fight, it'll be interesting to see who stayed on that and who was a fan of the slobber knockers, because I believe that was matched up with the two heavyweight fights, or at least
no, because I watched the Pitbull Curran fight, when the decision was over, I switched over, and Mitrione was just knocking out Derek Lewis.
Okay.
Right at that moment. So and then the Overeem fight was actually afterwards. So it would be Chiesa? Was Chiesa right before? Because I don't even know.
Yeah, it would have been Lozon, which, man, wow. And again, we'll get to that. That Lozon-Chiesa fight was awesome.
Really? Okay. But, cause I haven't even seen that fight yet, because we had some people over and I actually went out to dinner and afterwards, and I'm doing the show right now. So I've seen, I covered Bellator because Josh Nason was live in Uncasville to watch that one. And then I saw like the last three fights, and I saw the first Soriano and was the second fight, Chris Beal. So I saw Soriano and Chris Beal, and then so everything in between I'm going to actually watch after we're done here.
Yeah, you're really going to enjoy that one. But we'll just go back to Bellator 123 here. As far as the rest of the show goes, including that main event that saw Pitbull knock out Curran and win the title, what did you think about the show and what did you think about that fight?
Well, Pitbull didn't knock him out. Pitbull beat him by a decision.
Oh, decision. I'm sorry. That's
yeah,
right.
He knocked him down, I think three or four times. I think in rounds two, I don't remember, but round five was pretty decisive. I had 50-45. I know that the judges were 48-47. And there were close rounds to where 48-47 is not outrageous, but that surprised me. And when they read the scorecard, I just remember when they read the scorecard and they go, judge number one is at 48-47. And the way he said it was almost like he was reading a split decision card. And it was just like, oh, my God. I had 50-45, and they're going to do a split decision, and that means anyone can win this. But then they said the other Sue's at 49-46. I mean, I thought Pitbull clearly won the fight, and he landed the harder shots. He got his takedowns. It was a very good fight, good main event, though. Good five-round. It was a little slow early because I think Pitbull was afraid of gassing out, so he went a lot slower than he usually does. But he did have the energy to go the five, and he didn't really seem to get tired. And, once he was confident that he had that, the gas, he turned it up a little bit more. There were a couple times where he knocked Curran down and, went to finish him, but Curran stayed in there. Curran was tough. Pitbull's, as far as featherweight goes, he's a tough guy. Good, 23-2 is his record, I think. Something like that. I don't have it in front of me. But,
21-2, something like that.
What?
So 21-2? Let me see here.
It could be 21-2. It was something.
Pitbull, 22-2.
22-2. So he's 21-2 going in, and the other, and then Curran was 20-5 going in. Okay.
And for those who didn't know as well, too, Curran had beaten Pitbull by split decision in January of last year.
Right, which is one of the reasons why when I thought they did a split decision, it's like, not again. Because both times that Pitbull lost, he's only had two career losses. One was to Curran and the other was to Joe Warren. And they were both pretty damn close. In fact, he could have won both of those fights. So he could be as much as 23-0, which, in MMA, to be 23-0 and you're fighting real guys, it's pretty damn impressive.
Now, was this a good enough fight where you want to come back with this thing, or do you have Pitbull and I don't know.
The thing is, I think Strauss never got his rematch. So I don't know that I would come right back with it. I think I would want to go with Strauss and Pitbull.
You have Frodo, I guess, too, who's still, he always claims undefeated as well.
Yeah, you could do that. There's different guys. I mean, with the booking, they're going to book how they're going to book. But I mean, they're booking 100% based on ratings, which means that and Curran is a guy who's one of their guys. So he's going to get preferential treatment, but I just don't think coming right back with this one right now, that wouldn't be what I would do. But they did announce they are coming right back with Will Brooks against Michael Chandler which they had to do for the lightweight title. That's also going to be on November the 15th. So they got a big show, on that night and against UFC, and they're on free, and UFC's, free versus, television. It makes me feel like, between tonight feeling like the Monday Night Wars, and then November 15th feels like that, late 80s, you know, when you put Starcade against, or not Starcade, but you put the Clash against WrestleMania, you know, it's almost like, or the Royal Rumble against, you know, the Bunkhouse Stampede. You know, it almost feels like, you know, UFC and Bellator, you know, and like, let's face it, you know, I mean, they ran 8 miles apart. You know what I mean?
It's like, and Bellator is being unabashedly, you know, with UFC, obviously, you know, Bonner and Ortiz, but you look at this show that had, obviously, King Mo's got name value outside of this, but Tandon McCrory, Bobby Lashley, LeVar Johnson, Czech Congo. I mean, these are names that, you know, that would be familiar to a UFC fan, so they're not making any bones about using those guys.
Well, they just, you know, they wanted, when it came that UFC was going against them, I mean, they tried to load up. And UFC, look, UFC's card was loaded up compared to most cards, most fight, you know, fight night cards too as well. You know, they had more depth than usual. It was a good card, you know, on lineup wise anyway.
So, what did you think about Bobby Lashley against Josh Burns?
Bobby controlled the whole fight. He didn't impress me. But he controlled the whole fight. He'd take the guy down. He would hold him down. Kept trying, you know, certain submissions, never really got him. And then finally finished, you know, finally did get the choke, did some ground and pound. Burns isn't very good. You know, I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, he was supposed to be a sparring partner of, Klitschko. But boy, I mean, his, you know, Bobby Lashley was outboxing him. Bobby felt more comfortable boxing, but, you know, he did the promo. He's going to, you know, this is his big thing. He wants to win the championship. This is like his Olympics or something, but he's 38 years old. He's a good wrestler. But I don't see him having, you know, when I look at even like, you know, Vitaly Minnikov and guys like that, I just think those guys will kill Bobby. That's my thought. I don't see him being a champion in Bellator. He's still real big, although the other guy was 265 pounds, so he fought. But you know, Burns is 0-5 in Bellator, and three of those fights were under 2.5 minutes, or right at 2.5 minutes or less. And Bobby went in the second round. You know, not that okay. Well, Bobby didn't finish him in the first round. He's no good. That's not what I'm saying at all. He controlled the whole fight.
And probably if he just decided to start raining down elbows and fists and forearms instead of maybe going for the kilo, he probably could have because he had Burns busted wide open.
He won from mount. And in the first round, I think he could have, he was in side control almost the entire round. I think he could have gone to mount had he wanted to take the risk of going. And once he was there, he probably could have finished him. But he had in his mind for a while, he was trying to win by submission and that, you know, that just wasn't working. So finally, you know, he went and did the ground and pound. And then when Burns got up, you know, Bobby choked him out. So, I mean, you can't say anything bad, but he didn't, he came off when you watch it, he came off like a guy you liked. He came off as a friendly guy, which is funny because he's a heel on television in TNA. But I didn't feel like, he impressed me, and they were talking about, well, you know, Bobby's taken, he's really improved his game and, you know, for a raw guy. And it's like, he's 38. You know what I mean? It's like, there's not going to be a lot of improvement. And even if he improves his skill set, he's 38, you know, his other aspects of the game are probably going to, you know, his wrestling is probably going to decline and probably significantly over the next couple of years. So I don't know.
Bobby Lashley and Herschel Walker, book it.
What?
Bobby Lashley and Herschel Walker.
They were hugging each other, so maybe that, you know, that would be, you know, whatever. Herschel Walker was there. I think that's a little late for Herschel Walker. That's just my gut. I'm sure that Herschel Walker was there for a reason. There were no, like, it's like, yeah, Herschel Walker's friends with Scott. Maybe Scott asked him for a favor to come. That's possible. I mean, it's like, you know, Herschel Walker, you know, he's friends with Kane and he's real good friends with Luke Rockhold and Daniel Cormier. But, you know, I don't think he was friends with anyone on this show. So he came either he came probably because Scott wanted to talk to him and the feeling that Herschel, you know, might help the ratings, and he probably would. But Herschel's what, 52 now? 53?
Is he that old? He didn't really thought of it that way because he looks. I mean,
I know I know how he looks. I tell you, I saw Herschel.
I guess it was 89. Was that trade right? So, yeah, Christ, I watched him. Was in Georgia? Oh man, was it? Yeah, he's 52.
52.
Born in 1962.
52. Okay, because wow. I saw Herschel in the gym a couple times. I remember the first time I saw, I was watching Herschel and Kane go at it. Okay. In the gym, and they had headgear on, okay? And you know, he's got headgear on, and his face is completely covered. So all I'm seeing is some guy with shorts and a body like, you know, not quite like Bobby Lashley, but not that far. And he's out there swinging leather with Kane, and he's connecting sometimes too. And, you know, Kane's knocking him around. And I went to Bob Cook, and I go, who the hell's this guy? Goes, that's Herschel Walker. And I go, holy, whatever. I mean, you know, because I didn't, you know, when I walked in, he already had the headgear on, and he was, I mean, I just didn't, you know, I couldn't see his face. I couldn't see anything. I just saw this really muscular, I mean, he's muscular as hell. You know, I mean, you know, and for any age, I, you know, and how he can maintain whatever it is, 225 pounds of muscle with zero food. You ever hear about how he eats and people think that,
yes.
People think that that's like some work about Herschel Walker's food. And I know from Luke, you know, who's I'm pretty friendly with, that's not a work because they room together. Herschel Walker eats one meal at, and it's dinner. He goes out there and he trains with no food. And no, I mean, you know, I don't want to get into my Herschel Walker stories, but people think like I always look at people like on the internet when those stories were coming out and they're going, oh, there's no way it's true. And believe me, if I didn't know it was true, I would say the same thing. And I would say, there's no way, you know, you get this way by eating, you know, one meal and it's whatever it is with like chicken soup and whatever it is that he eats and bread, that you could look like that. I mean, I don't care what you're doing. I mean, And
the thing is, Herschel looks exactly the same way now as he did in high school, where people were obviously
But here's the thing, that was a work though. Okay, because I know that like there was the stories about how Herschel never lifted weights and all he did was like 1,000 push-ups and 1,000.
Oh, that, yeah, that were me
and
all.
And I know people who were around and he did lift weights, so that was a work. But I'm sure he does whatever he does now. You know, as far as like, you know, I don't know if it's weights or whatever, you know, whatever it is, he's got to train. You know, I mean, I don't think he's just doing sit-ups and push-ups all day long, you know, because you just don't have enough time. And then when you're, you know, but whatever it is, the eating stuff's not a work.
And he's a freak. He is a genetic freak. He's an amazing genetic freak.
He's a complete freak of nature. No, if he was 19 and he decided that he was going to be an MMA fighter, he'd be world champion. I mean,
yes.
I don't have
to. And in this era, too, when it comes to football, because again, there were people that. Herschel Walker is one of the few guys that you could ever say anybody that could actually come from high school in the NFL. Almost they say nobody can do that.
He could have come right from high school and played in the NFL. Absolutely.
He had the best chance. And in this era where, you know, you have guys bucking the system when it comes to the NCAA and everything, you know, if anybody could break through, if there was a 19-year-old Herschel Walker now. You know, again, either in MMA or in football, it would be absolutely amazing. And, you know, you talk about, like, maybe using him for a rating. To me, he's – if you're going to break Herschel Walker back out, isn't that the pay-per-view that Coker would want to do? Wouldn't he have a place on there?
They're just not looking at pay-per-view right now. So I don't think that they're thinking pay-per-view or anything like that. That would be – but, again, it's like, you know, 52 – even when he was 49, it was like really questionable, and they had to pick his opponents pretty carefully because nobody wants to see Herschel Walker get beat up. At 52, and I don't know that he even wants to do it anymore. You know, I mean, I think that it was like this thing he really wanted to do once, and then he did it a second time. And I think that had Strikeforce not been bought by UFC, I'd like to think he would have done a third fight. I mean, you know, maybe he would have, maybe he wouldn't have. I don't know. I just remember when he fought the second fight and his attitude. And it was, I could feel watching him that it was like, I did it. You know, it's like, I did it. You know, I don't need to do it again. I remember there was one person who at a press, at the press conference afterwards, it was after Herschel won the second fight. And for those people who don't know, Herschel was probably the greatest, and if not the greatest, you know, certainly in the top five, college football players of all time, which is saying a lot. But anyway, so when Herschel, they just go, well, do you think, I just remember it was so funny because, you know, of course he trains with Cain. He goes, well, Herschel, you know, do you think you could, you know, you got a goal for going for the UFC championship? And Herschel just, you know, like almost like, are you even asking me this question? You know what I mean? It's, and you know, and Herschel can, you know, he can BS and you know what I mean? Like, you know, I could go back and play in the NFL, and which, you know, at 49 years old, I don't really believe he could. Or I could go out there and run a 4-whatever 40, which at 49 years old, I don't believe he could, although he looks like he could. But when they, I just remember when they said, like, you know, I think he said something like, I train with Kane. It's like, come on. there's like, he doesn't, in my dreams, I'm not fighting for the heavyweight championship type of a reaction. But, yeah, no, he was there. So yeah, we had Bobby Lashley. Well, you mean the idea of Bobby Lashley against Herschel in a fight? They're buddies. But, I mean, when they were in Strikeforce together and they were both in the Miami show years and years ago, I thought but Bobby beat Wes Sims and I forgot who Herschel beat, but it was an unknown guy. I did think that had an intriguing quality to it, but I suppose, you know, I mean, it's like, it's that freak show thing. And it's like, you know, if you're going to use freak show guys, I think that Bobby would take Herschel down and hold him down though. I'm pretty sure that, you know, I mean, Herschel's pretty good and all that, but, you know, Herschel's not going to stop Bobby's wrestling, I don't think, at this stage. But I don't expect the fight to happen either. We had Herschel. King Mo looked good. Mo looked good.
Yeah, semi-main event against Dustin Jacoby, knocked him out in the second round.
Right, and you know, he went against a striker, and he was out there to strike at certain points. I mean, he got his takedowns, but then in the second round, I mean, they were both winging. It was pretty good. And Mo put himself in harm's way, because he was in there with a guy who you know, hits and kicks hard. But Mo got him first and put him down and finished him.
I tell you what, I did not realize when I went to the UFC 101 show in Philadelphia that I would be seeing the barn cat, Tamden McCrory's last pro fight for a while. He fights Brennan Ward and knocked him out in 21 seconds.
That was crazy.
Yeah, how was that fight?
He just knocked him out in 20. He just clocked him right away. And Brennan Ward went, you know, Brennan Ward won a tournament, fought Alexander Shlemenko. He lost to Shlemenko, but I mean, he's a tough guy. And there's this guy, Tanner McCrory has not fought in 5 years, came in there and just freaking boom, 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 boom. And it was over,
huh.
You know, 21 seconds, but, you can't look better than that.
Czech Congo, I guess, looked pretty good against LeVar Johnson, too. The rear naked choke submission in the first round. Not what I would have expected. Would have expected a knockout here, but Congo gets the choke.
Yeah. So LeVar Johnson came out swinging like he always does, knocked Congo down, had him hurt. Congo kind of regained it, and then LeVar was what LeVar was, as always is. He got taken down, and once he got taken down, we figured the end was near, and it was. I mean, he doesn't have good submission defense. LeVar Johnson's, you know, he's kill or be killed in the first round. So I think that from a television standpoint, he makes for a good fight because he comes out fast and either knocks you out or he will be finished himself. And this was one of those cases where, you know, Congo was a better fighter than him and, weathered the early storm and beat him. But it was entertaining, absolutely entertaining fight. The Lashley fight was not very entertaining. The Mo fight was entertaining. The Pitbull fight was good, very good. And the Tamden McCrory fight was a 21-second knockout. So as far as an overall Bellator show, I was entertained by it, absolutely. And the angle,
good season premiere, I guess.
What?
Good season premiere, I guess. Get off to the right start.
I think it's a season premiere. It was good. Now, next week is Emmanuel Newton against Joey Beltran. Oh my God. And when I saw those promos, it's like, you got to be kidding me. Joey Beltran getting a championship fight. Oh my God. But that's
former UFC.
I'll tell you what though, of the, oh my gods, you know, between Virgin, that Stephen Bonner promo and Thiago Silva, I am absolutely, you know, like,
Matt Mitrione's happy.
I saw that promo. Matt Mitrione was so happy that they gave him a shot. I am absolutely mystified by this one. I mean.
So Dana trying to live to the GQ, or what was the magazine, Maxim? Who hit him with that? The British GQ?
It's sleazy kind of sports. Yeah, this doesn't help any. The thing is, it's like,
one of those things. I just want to say this: just because you can do something, and the whole thing with this is, technically, he came out of the judicial system unscathed.
Right.
He
was exonerated. That was the thing. He went through the system, and he was exonerated.
And I'm all for, you cannot stop a man from trying to earn a living. With that said, if you are the UFC. And you've had some of the situations you've had with former fighters recently, or whoever it is, I would be very careful with these sorts of things. Very, very careful, especially looking at how people came down on Roger Goodell in the NFL over Ray Rice. You know, forget about the moral aspect or anything like that, PR-wise. This is a toughie.
I'm thinking PR-wise as much as here's the thing. I don't care about War Machine and Josh Grisby, but that only makes the decision worse. From a timing standpoint, if those two incidences didn't happen in the last couple of weeks, I would still be infuriated. It's like he failed two drug tests, right? Thiago.
It was at least two. He had two, and then he had something else, didn't he?
No, he had two drug test failures. He had two drug test failures. And you know what? I even had sympathy for him on one of the drug test failures. I know why I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been, you know, that was the one where he faked the drug test and got caught with a fake.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, he had some other shit.
He had a fake urine drug test. And that's because he was taking steroids at the time, and he did fake urine because he didn't want to get caught. So he ended up getting caught with fake urine. So it was just as bad. The deal was, he had a really, really bad back for a long time. He hadn't, you know, fought in a long time. He needed the money. His back was killing him. He couldn't train. So he took steroids to heal faster. Okay. Now, they're illegal. You can't do that in sports. And, it's like, there's a part of sympathy where he's like, look, this guy makes his living fighting. He hadn't fought in what it was a year. He needed the money. You can be all high and moral, you know, moralistic on that, but he broke the rules.
He has not had a good life. He really, honestly has not had a good life.
He's had a tough life. Absolutely. But there are rules and you just can't do that. And he got caught a second time my God, he was exhausted. Here's the thing. The charges were dropped because his wife fled the country. You know, it's not like he went through a thing and through DNA evidence we found out that, hey, he was falsely accused of something that he didn't do. You know what I mean?
I like the spin that she's uncooperative because she left the country.
Well, of course she's going to be uncooperative in testifying against him when she leaves the country. Why did she leave? You know, why did she leave? I mean, I can't tell you why she left the country. But
I don't know. I mean, and for people who don't know this story, in February, Silva was threatened to kill people,
there were the text messages. He went to the gym where she was at. Well, he allegedly put the gun in her mouth a couple days before, right? And when he found out.
She got a protective order.
When he found out she was having an affair with Pavel Popovich, when she's in the gym and he's in the gym, it's Pavel Popovich's gym. He goes to the gym with a gun and threatens to, I guess, shoot the police are called. The SWAT team has to surround him. They had to use a taser on him, I think, as I recall, and they finally brought him in and whatever. You know, I mean,
he just had a bad day.
He had a bad day for, you know, whatever, you know, your whatever.
But, and the thing is,
but there's no, you know, there's no, what's the upside of UFC hiring him?
That's the thing, and it was only dropped yesterday. You had to rush and get Silva back on the roster because you're worried about Coker doing it? I mean, if I'm the UFC, I stand back
really
and say whoever's...
Okay. I know that Coker, I mean, I shouldn't say I know. I mean, Bellator did hire War Machine, which was a really stupid move years ago, okay? Because it's one thing, it's like when UFC put War Machine on Ultimate Fighter. I don't hold that against him at all because nobody knew about him. When he starts threatening, you know, saying that he wants, you know, he hopes somebody kills the president, UFC fired him over that. Okay? When he started saying really stupid things, and then there were other reasons too. But they did fire him. And then Bellator picked up this nutcase, okay? Which was completely stupid, but God only knows whatever. You know, they did a lot of stuff. I don't know that Scott Coker picks up Thiago Silva. I don't know that he doesn't for sure, but I would be almost like 90% that he would not, because here's the thing. It's one thing. I mean, forget about what Bjorn did. Bjorn's not in the picture today, you know, and I don't even think Bjorn would have picked up this guy, but you know, who knows? Bjorn did pick up, you know, guys that UFC got rid of for those reasons. But yeah, most everything that UFC does, whether I agree with it or disagree with it, and you know, most of the time I agree with it, but there are certainly times when I disagree, you know, as far as some business things and everything, I always get it. I don't always think that they're right necessarily, but I always get the reasoning and I always understand that they might be right in these situations. This one, I was floored. I mean, they never do anything that surprises me. It's like Vince. Vince doesn't really ever do anything that surprises me either. This, I mean, I was absolutely, when I first saw that, I thought someone was playing a joke on me because, of course, they would never do this. Then I found
granted,
out,
Dana wasn't there, but there was not one question about this, and maybe there was in the scrum, not one question about this in the post-fight press conference.
Did Dana go to the post-fight press conference?
No, I can't remember who it was. It was kind of
Dana didn't go to the post-fight press conference, and I thought that might have been the reason.
Well, and you know, and well, God, what a great decision then if you're going to do something like that. I mean, I just do it so quickly, and and maybe there's something we don't know. Maybe he's been in contact with him the whole time. Maybe there's, you know, he had a mental breakdown.
Here's the problem, okay? Forgetting about the, you know, if nothing had happened, then this being a bad move. Things did happen. The Josh Crispy thing happened. The War Machine thing happened. They happened in recent weeks. Okay. Now, granted, War Machine had not fought in UFC in years, but UFC was still mentioned. There is that tie-in. It was a major national media story. Grisby wasn't so much of a national media story, but it was a story certainly in certain parts of the country. I just did an interview yesterday with a major publication, and just by the nature of the interview, put it this way, I know that the reporter, before they talked to me, had talked to Catherine Grisby, which is, you know, so that tells you what they were looking at, right? That what the story is, mm-hmm. if they're talking to Catherine Grisby, which is Josh Grisby, for those of you who don't know the story, was a fighter in UFC. He actually had a championship fight with Jose Aldo pretty much set up. And then, I think Aldo got hurt, as I recall. And then Grisby fought, was it Cub Swanson who just destroyed him? Somebody destroyed him. He ended up getting destroyed. No, it's Poirier, Dustin Poirier.
Yeah.
Dustin Poirier destroyed him. So
yeah, and he was, you know, he was having a great run in WEC when there was a lot of tension on that being on what was the channel?
Versus,
thank you.
Yeah. So he got beat and then he lost a couple more fights and he's gone. Okay, so he's gone from UFC. And allegedly you know, he was arrested a couple weeks back, the same week as War Machine, a couple days before War Machine, for sicking, you know, allegedly sicking his pit bull on his wife. And the pit bull chewed up his wife, and apparently, you know, he had beaten up his wife first and then sicked the pit bull on him, the pet pit bull, who he taught to.
And this is not like one after the other. I believe there was time. Like, you know, she didn't press charges, and then he set the pit bull on her, you know, just to top it off.
No. There are many different instances.
Was okay, because I thought that was in...
The incident that I'm talking about all happened at once, but there were other instances before that she didn't ever go to the police on or anything like that. So I don't know if she went... But anyway, and she's trying to get back with him, too, and still was as of yesterday morning, which is another...
This coming... As he sat there with firearms in a marijuana field and his three-year-old son, and that's how the cops found him.
Loaded firearms next to the three-year-old son.
And
right
not just like a 9mm...
Right next to the three-year-old son. Loaded and not what is not locked up, right?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Just, you know, blows your mind. But anyway, so this is all happening in the last couple of weeks. So if, you know, why would you risk, you know, if I'm UFC, one of the things I would never do, if I could help it, is not hire nutcases. Now, sometimes perhaps there's like a nutcase. And again, you know, you say like a Nick Diaz. You know what? Nick Diaz is not a nutcase. Okay,
Mike Tyson could be a nutcase.
But okay. So if there's a Mike Tyson, you can go and go, well, you know what? You know, in quest of dollars, there's a lot of things that people will do and a lot of risks that they will take when it comes to hiring people in an entertainment business when it's actually someone who generates dollars. But Thiago Silva is not that guy. You know what I mean? It's like if this happened with George St. Pierre, of course it would never, but if it did, you know, I would almost go, well, you know, the guy's doing 800,000 pay-per-view buys, 700,000 pay-per-view buys. You'll look the other way or you risk it. It's Thiago Silva. They're in one person. He's not bringing in new fans in. He's just a guy. And to risk... You're not legal in New York, okay? As much bullshit is that you are not, you're not making it easy because you're giving your enemies. Here's the thing: I don't understand why you would give your enemies ammunition. And believe me, you got enemies. And hiring Thiago Silva is ammunition. If he does anything wrong, and based on his track record, he probably will.
If nothing else, coming overweight or possibly test positive for steroids.
That's, you know, yeah, I mean, that's it.
And that's the least of it.
That's the least of it. But, you know, look, again, like if he was a model citizen and there was nothing in his, I mean, remember, if you remember, like when all this went down, I mean, like the big joke when all this went down was, it's like, oh, Thiago Silva, who would have ever thought? You know what I mean? It's like, everyone who knew, you know what I mean? They didn't know it would be a horrible thing, but it was like, if you had to ask at that point in time, and you said, there's a fighter on our roster who is going to flip out and do something really, really stupid like this, who would it be? A lot of people would have named him first. I mean, I know that because people had told me that before this ever happened. So it's not like this is some, you know, some normal guy who, you know, had a moment of insanity and, you know, jealous rage and did something really stupid and, you know, and all that. Again, like if he had been a model fighter in the sense of, you know, if he was a great fighter, you know, I don't think a great fighter's enough to overlook, but the bottom line is he already failed two drug tests.
And it overshadows what was a good night for them at Foxwoods. As you know, we'll talk about the three you saw, and again, the Lozon. Let me just talk about that real quick.
Real quick, we should mention the two fights for November the 8th. We even mentioned that.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so two main events were announced tonight for November the 8th. There will be a show in Sydney, Australia, which will be an early morning show. and that will be a Fight Pass show, I believe. I'm 95% sure. It hasn't been told to me, but I'm 95% sure it's a Fight Pass show. And it's going to be Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping, which was the fight a week ago that Dana White said he wasn't going to make. But, you know, you change your mind. And it was the right, you know, it's the right fight to make for a bunch.
Yes, it is. And it's again, it's a perfect, to me, it's a better than perfect UFC fight night, you know, especially for that early morning Macau, Sydney, New Zealand shift. You know, it's a very, very good one.
Yeah. And then the evening show, which will be from, what's the name of this city?
Brazil. Uberlândia?
What?
Is it Uberlândia?
Uberlândia, Brazil, yes. So that's going to be Shogun Hua and Jimmy Manoa. You know, we're both coming off losses in a light heavyweight match as well. So we got know how crazy it's going to be. So November the 8th, we got a doubleheader. We got in a morning and an evening show. Then November 15th, we've got a head-to-head UFC versus Bellator. So anyway, and what day's Survivor Series this year?
Let me find out. Let's see. Nothing like it. They don't make it easy on you. They really don't. And I mean, are we going to have November 2? There's a boxing event in November, if I'm not mistaken.
There almost
too,
always
right?
is.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what that one is too.
I think that the boxing, there's a big fight November 9th, maybe? I seem to think. What day is Floyd fight? No, Floyd's fighting in a couple weeks.
Yeah, Floyd's got the September gig.
Right.
You know, that's, you know, for those who, you know, people, May and September, you always see Cinco de Mayo, and around September 15th, De La Hoya kind of carved those days, and
yeah,
Mayweather's
it's
taking those on.
Day in Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, just monster days. And then November, there's always usually something good in November
and
December, too.
It's usually a Pacquiao fight in November.
Yeah, and he'd say, I know he's coming up soon against, the guy he's facing, which, not great competition. Survivor Series November 23rd from St. Louis.
So, now there's UFC November 22nd from Austin, which they're trying to put together a card on right now as well. Well, there's always UFC, says every single one.
There really is, and, you know, this UFC 50, I guess it was Fight Night 54, I think is what it was from Connecticut, 4,086 people, a sellout for that building is what they're claiming, the way it was scaled out or whatever. I'm not sure what sub-building they used there for the Foxyard, Ledyard, Connecticut, Unkinsville. It's got all these different names to it. $479,620 gate. The main event of the show was Jacare and Musasi in a rematch from 2008, and just a absolute. It would be tough for me to believe that after this, he's not going to Jacare, who submission in the third round with a guillotine, just completely dominated. The fight went 14 minutes and 30 seconds. He spent 10 minutes and 51 seconds in control. To me, outside of when it comes to Weidman and Belfort, I don't think Jacare is fighting until he fights the winner of that fight.
Agreed. I do think from watching it, though, and Jacare looked really good. He got takedowns in every round. Musashi could never get up, and he was working for submissions, didn't get one in the first, didn't get one in the second, finally got it in the third. But when I watched this fight, I think Chris Weidman beats him.
I think so, too, although I am a little biased towards wrestlers. But, yeah, I mean, again, he seemed to know exactly what he wanted to do, and it was very apparent early on for him. You know, Musasi is just not going to be able to hurt him. Yeah, you get hit with a punch or something like that, but realistically, he knew he had his number right off the bat, and he just stayed with it.
Yeah, I mean, Musashi absolutely would have a chance, but the thing was in this fight, and Musashi is very quick reflex, and I think he's quicker than Weidman, but I just... I don't know. I feel that Weidman and Musashi will be a great fight. You know, maybe not quite as good as the Machida fight, but probably similar. I mean, maybe put it this way, it won't have the bad early period, but I don't know that it'll be as exciting down the line, because I don't think that I don't think that Souza's stand up is at the level of Machida's. And I think that he's going to have to beat him standing, because I don't think that that Jacare is taking Weidman down. Of course, that's we got a long way to go. Weidman still has to beat Belfort. You know, I don't want to count anything happening until it happens. But just when I was watching it, that was, you know, you kind of look at like, okay, where are we going next? And it's, you know, Weidman, it should be favored with Vitor.
And Jacare didn't show much on his feet and didn't have to until the third round, where it was just one of those situations early on where, again, at that point, he had his number for everything and it was just a matter of time.
Yeah, yeah. But he dominated the fight. He absolutely looked like a top contender, absolutely deserved a championship fight. I'm sure that that's what's happening next. I think that they made it very easy, and he made it very easy for himself because he dominated the fight. In the semi, we had Ben Rothwell knocked out Alistair Overeem, and that's, I think that's pretty much, I'm not saying fired, but I think that's pretty much it for the for Alistair Overeem. I don't think...
I'm thinking in hindsight, and I went 0-4 in the picks, but I'm thinking in hindsight, why did I take Overeem? And I know Rothwell coming off the TRT thing, and he's been very inconsistent in Overeem, but you know what? I'm not saying that the people have the formula to beat Overeem, but it's not the same guy.
No, look, he was 20... He would cut... You know, he's legitimately... He's 13 pounds down. He did not have the power. If this guy had the power and the explosiveness that he had before, he'd have finished Rothwell with what he hit him with. And he didn't. It's not because Rothwell is so tough. Although Rothwell is tough, it's because he didn't have the power that he used to have, not even close. It's a different guy. And, you know, you take that away from him. And look, I mean, this is a guy who years and years ago was losing fights. Then he became super.
Well, that's the thing. In dog years, what, you know, when it comes to the fights he's had and the K1 stuff and everything, you know, the brutal knockout by Liddell was in 03.
That's the point.
It's been a long time.
That's right. So the thing is, I mean, he's not that great of a fighter unless he's enhanced. And we all know it because we all saw it when he was a physically impressive looking and not bad front-running, you know, 205-pounder, who all of a sudden became Superman, you know, at 260 pounds. Well, now he can't be that guy anymore, and it's what it is. I mean, I still thought he would beat Rothwell. But, you know, Rothwell is a tough guy. He took his shots, and then Rothwell hit him, and Overeem has always been a guy who, if you hit him, you know, you can get him. And Rothwell.
Yeah, Rothwell bounced one off behind his left ear, which you know, dropped him, and then, you know, ground and pound, and it was over quick. I mean, 2 minutes, 19 seconds.
Yeah, so destroyed him. The thing that I thought was hilarious was when, when Rothwell was coming off TRT. Remember that Rothwell fight when he beat, I guess, was Brandon Vera the guy that he beat last time out, or was it?
Yes, it was, because
Brendan Shaw.
The decision, well, it was Vera, because that didn't the decision give Vera some life when it looked like he was going to be fired, and they said,
Vera
was
still fired this time, wasn't he?
Oh, I thought they gave him a reprieve after that.
No, they gave him some time. Vera got the reprieve when he lost to Thiago Silva a couple of years ago. When Thiago Silva failed the drug test, Vera had been cut, and since the guy who beat him failed the drug test, and it was no longer a loss, it was no contest, they did the right thing and they brought Vera back. But when the same thing happened with Rothwell, I don't think they brought Vera back.
Yeah, maybe they didn't, but, you know, Vera ended up testing positive, because he said he had a TUE exemption, and I guess it was... You know, the UFC actually came down on harder on him than anybody else.
The UFC came down. No, the Wisconsin. This was the Milwaukee show, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so he fought in Milwaukee at a TUE exemption. They tested him, and he was over the limit of allowable testosterone. And Wisconsin wasn't going to do nothing, but UFC suspended him on their own. So this is his first fight back from the suspension. So now he's clean. Now his body looked absolutely, totally, completely different than it did in his last fight. His last fight, we were going like, oh my God, what happened to his body? He looks great. And he was, oh, I got a nutritionist and I eat better and this and that. And then comes out, well, he's on TUE. Well, it's okay. There's your answer. Well, now he looked like the old Ben Rothwell, you know, but he's still a tough guy. And
I was saying, technically, maybe he didn't lie. He did get a new nutritionist. That was made the wrong one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's like people are going like, well, you know, it's the first guy off TRT that finally won. But it's like, but he was fighting Overeem. You know what Overeem's like testosterone level is?
Is he getting asterisks for that one?
Yeah. I mean, it's like Overeem. That's the other thing. It's like Overeem's fighting with no, you know, you go and fight with low testosterone. That isn't a good thing. And as we just saw, now Overeem did, he beat Mir, right? But Mir was coming off, yes, it too, right?
Yeah, and that was a decision,
that was an even more amazing fight.
Yep.
Yeah. So
again, Overeem going three rounds can't be good. And yeah, I don't know. You know, talk about, you know, him being fired. He's too, to me, he'd be too sexy for Strikeforce to pass up.
Strikeforce would take him in a heartbeat. Plus, Coker likes him anyway. They're friends.
But should he maybe stop altogether?
Stop altogether what?
Fighting, or you know, or just...
no, he'll probably, I would guess he may I don't know what his contractual situation is, because the thing is he's really highly paid, and even if you want to keep him, there's no way you can justify at this point whatever it is that you know, that his guarantee, it can't be justified. So either he could stay at UFC, but they would have to cut his pay, or I don't know, because you know, it's like he has to be in big fights, but I mean, you know, what can you do? You know, I mean, who can he fight? I don't even know who he can fight next.
The Nelson Hunt winner? Do we already do that?
No, maybe the Nelson Hunt loser, not the winner.
That's you. It's a loser. Yeah, that would be.
Let's see, Hunt. You know, I mean, Hunt and Nelson. Look, if Roth will knock this guy out, what are Hunt and Nelson going to do to this guy?
Well, do you let Stipe Miocic knock him out? Because it would be a name on his resume.
You know what?
It's big.
Yeah, but I think that Stipe Miocic is coming off of a win, and they, I don't think they're going to put him with him. I think they'll put Stipe with somebody else. Maybe they'll put Stipe with Rothwell. I could actually see that one.
That's the thing. Yeah, Rothwell gets an upset. You got a story, and you know, if Miocic wins, you get what he should be doing.
Yeah, but yeah, with Overeem, it's just like, you know, who do you put him against? It's just tough booking, because again, it's not like, you know, you can always make matches for him, but he gets paid so much that they have to be money matches. And I don't know if there's such thing as a money match with him after this knockout.
Mitrione over him, but
I don't see that. I don't see that. Not right now. Maybe Derek Lewis and over him. I could see that. But there's no money in that.
No, then and God, I, you know, but Derek Lewis ran,
called out Matt Mitrione and got knocked out in, what was it, 21 seconds?
Yes, ran right into Mitrione's, it wasn't, a, I mean, it, at first it looked like a forearm.
I thought it was a forearm.
And followed, it, the way it hit, it basically, it hit fist, followed through to forearm. Lewis is on his ass, Mitrione jumps right on him, and 41 seconds later, that's it. Mitrione, that was it, and says, he gives this terrible post-fight promo, says he's not ranked, but he's not going to call anybody out because he's not ranked, and he's happy Thiago Silva's back, and just he didn't like Derek Lewis calling him out by his name, and he took it back to being gangster, didn't know he was a gangster in Indianapolis, but he went back to thugging it up, so... Matt Mitrione, everybody.
Now that was one where it was like, I picked Derek Lewis and I was thinking like, God damn, what a surprise.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's an embarrassing, humbling loss to put it mildly. The lightweight fight you didn't see, was another $50,000 winner. The two performances of the night went to Rothwell and Jacare.
Who got best fight? Or
Lozon and Chiesa, and it
Lozon,
was fantastic.
Lozon, yeah, I mean, Lozon always gets a bonus, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Scramble Mania. Lozon, actually, I think now has the record outright. He broke the one he had with Anderson Silva.
Cerrone might. UFC record, Lozon would have it, but if you include the WEC, I think, might have to look it up, but Cerrone had a lot of WC ones that people don't remember.
Ah, that's right. In at least UFC-wise, Lozon's got it now, and also sets a record, I think, for stoppages that he had tied with BJ Penn at the 155-pound division. But, I mean, just a really super fun fight. Just scramble mania. Lozon looked like he had Chiesa a couple times in deep trouble. Chiesa got out of it, and they were going back and forth, and Lozon was never out of control of this fight, but boy, was it fun. And again, a typical Lozon fight, and just a, again, really, really, a really, really fun fight. And obviously we lost Nick Lentz and Charles Oliveira, so it was a damn good way to open
Charles
up.
Charles Oliveira had an infection, and he got sick again this morning, and the doctors wouldn't let him fight, which is too bad.
Yeah.
I was really looking forward to that fight, and Nick Lentz was really looking forward to that fight. I know that. So, yeah. So they lost. They lost. But I guess that's the reason that the guy didn't make weight, was he was just so sick.
And that's what he was saying. Yeah, at least that's what he's claiming. There was a flyweight fight between John Moraga and Justin Scroggins where, you know, the first round, Scroggins dominates it. You know, double legs Moraga to the ground, slipped a guillotine attempt, and just was on him. And in the second round, he starts up, does the same thing, takes him down with a double leg. Although he tried to get into half guard, and Moraga just wrapped him up in a very tight guillotine very quickly, and just like that, it's over. Out of nowhere, 47 seconds, just an embarrassing loss for Justin Scroggins. But up until that point, I know Moraga, you know, has had his title shot, is technically number five, didn't do anything to impress. In the fight before that, 155-pound fight, Raging Al Iaquinta and Rodrigo Dam. Just a one-sided beating. And Dam, you know, was very game and really did the best that he could. But Iaquinta ended up knocking him out. I have to check what the time was here. It was in the third round at 241, but just dominated him over those three rounds. You know, would knock him down and just, you know, stay on top of him. And Dam, again, tried to be very game, but just was completely dominated on his feet by Iaquinta.
The thing with I always thought that Al Iaquinta was very underrated in the sense that there's a couple of fights that he lost and he did lose them, but that he, you know, there's just things that happen in the fight where, I mean, I'm not saying that he's like going to be a top lightweight or anything like that, but he's a lot better than his record. He's a pretty well-rounded, tough guy.
Chris Beale, I saw him in Baltimore, and he was obviously incredibly impressive there with that knee stoppage. Won a unanimous decision victory over Takeki Matsuda. And again, now that's puts him at 2-0 in the UFC, 10-0 overall. And Matsuda was a replacement for Dustin Kimura. But Beale, again, looked very impressive.
Last week replacement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, very short notice. But, you know, Beale went out there and did what he had to do. And to me, he's a guy that it's very, very early. And you can't rush this or anything like that. But there, to me, seems to be a lot of star potential possible. I mean, and again, you have to put it on the sliding scale considering the weight division. You know, it's a bantamweight fight. So you put it on the sliding scale. But I think it's somebody that I think maybe you'll be able to do something with. And at least he's got natural charisma. He's got a good flashy style. This was a little bit of a different fight for him, but he grounded out and won. I think there might be something there with him. I don't know. What do you think?
Maybe it's early. It's early.
Yeah. A long way to go. Still. Rafael Natal, won a split decision victory over Chris Camozzi, and I didn't get a chance to see this whole thing, so I don't want to comment on it too much. I thought, you know, kind of from having to half pay attention to it, I thought Camozzi won, but again, I don't want to say for sure, but a lot of people are not happy with this decision. Camozzi's now lost four fights in a row, so you know, you wonder how long
that's going to be tough for him.
that's the whole thing, and maybe that's why people are getting a little bit more vehement on trying to come to his defense, because you know the inevitable may happen there. Chess Kelly also beat Sean Soriano unanimous decision victory there.
Yeah,
so
I saw that fight. He won. He struggled to win. He was almost dead when he won. That was the reason that you don't. He was the living proof of because he would have beaten Soriano a lot easier any other time, but it's just so hard. And he said afterwards, you know, like, you know, the hardest thing was making weight twice in 13 days.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, two fights in 2 weeks is.
Yeah, it's too short of a turnaround, and it's like I think like there's the mentality sometimes that like, well, you know, when you fight, you're in your best shape, which you in theory are. So all you got to do is maintain your conditioning for another couple of weeks if you don't get hurt in the fight and come right back. But the idea of peaking, and that's the weight thing, peaking twice in a couple of weeks, it's very, very hard on your body. And it I've seen it with different guys, you know, in other situations where, you know, the second time you're just not your body's just not ready to go through that same rigor so much, and then you come out the second time and you're just flat. And even though Skelly won, I mean, he wasn't anything close to what he was a couple of weeks ago, and he basically said it himself. He won. Now he needs some time off, and he needs to get that body rested up.
I guess all the credit will go to Todd Martin this week, who went 3-1. He and Front Row Brian, the only ones with winning records last night. Yeah.
Well,
everybody
it was,
else
it
was
500
or under.
It was tough because of the Overeem fight. Who would have thought that Rothwell would win? And then the main event. I guess people were split on the main event, but what was the other the Derek Lewis fight? Yeah, you know. I mean, Derek Lewis looked so good in the last fight, but it was just, you know, he took a step up in competition and he was not ready for that step up, obviously.
Hey, why did Impact Wrestling not have their name on Bobby Lashley's trunks?
They had it on a hat.
He didn't have anything on his trunks. I figured if he was going to have nothing on there, throw Impact Wrestling across the ass of the pants.
You probably were thinking more than anyone in Impact Wrestling was thinking, because you're right. If he's not going to have any sponsor, they should have sponsored him. I don't know what that, you know.
Well, they had their mind set on the
pay-per-view.
Hey, look,
at least he's going to keep the championship. You know, if he'd gotten his ass kicked, that he was going to lose the title.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I don't want to go back, you know, too old school here, but deservedly so.
Yeah.
You know, and especially when you're taping in advance, it's a risky proposition. It's one of those things where I guess I don't know if you have to tape two sets of interviews and things like that, but if it was up to me, I probably would, just in case.
Yeah, I don't know about getting people in there to tape interviews about him losing before he's lost. That'd be a tough one. You're telling everyone that you got no confidence in. But it's MMA. There's nothing guaranteed in MMA. That's the thing.
Well, that's the whole thing. And again, maybe they had their attention turned too much on Charlottesville tonight, which is where they were. Charlottesville, Virginia, the home of the University of Virginia. TNA taped a pay-per-view, Turning Point. apparently, up on the front page of the site, doesn't think it was the guy who went to the show doesn't think it was advertised by name until Jerry B. Borash announced it in the ring.
It was advertised on TV.
Okay, well, it's the main event. Jeff Hardy defeated MVP. Bobby Roode. I guess I won't spoil the whole thing, but I guess I just spoiled that, so that's enough. But it's up there on the site. So they have a couple days of taping
they're
there?
They're taping tonight. They will be taping, I think, the pay-per-view called Rivals. And then on Saturday, they will be taping Television.
Now, are these... just out of curiosity, is there any like Hermie Sadler or the Hardys, or is anybody helping promote this on behalf of TNA?
Somebody, but I don't know who. Hermie Sadler's with Jeff Jarrett, so I don't think that Hermie Sadler's involved in this anymore.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that would make sense. Because they have, I think, tapings coming up in Pennsylvania too, or isn't it like three days?
Yeah, they're taping 4 days in at the same place that Bellator is next week. Bellator is there on a Friday, and then TNA is going to be there Thursday through Saturday at the Sands in Bethlehem. And that'll be all they're taping through mid to late November. So they're not taping in Japan, which originally they were going to tape in Gifu, Japan on the day after Bound for Glory. But now they're just going to do Bound for Glory. And now maybe they'll add a Bobby Lashley fight for Bound for Glory, because the reason they didn't announce it was because they didn't know what was going to happen with the championship, because they didn't know what was going to happen to Bobby. So, but they don't, it's not like they got anybody ready for him. I guess they could do Bobby Roode, even though Bobby Roode loses on television. Because Bully Ray, it wouldn't be Bully Ray, because Bully Ray is going to be, if Bully Ray is back, which, you know, again, we'll find that out, at the next, he wasn't at the tapings this week. So if Bully Ray is in Bethlehem on the 16th, then it would be the Wolves against Team 3D, and maybe the Hardys is the third team. That has been discussed. That I don't know what the situation with the Hardys going to Japan is. There's other issues as well. But the idea is to do it Full Metal Mayhem as actually the so tables, ladders, chairs, chains, whatever. The idea is a Full Metal Mayhem match at Bound for Glory in Tokyo with at least the Hardys and the Wolves. I mean at least the Wolves and 3D. Although, you know, maybe, who knows, if Bully Ray's not there and Jeff's not there, then I don't know what it'll, maybe the Wolves will just not have a, maybe they'll have to, who knows. I think, look, they always face, what's the team? Minoru Tanaka and Koji Kanemoto?
I'd be okay with that. It doesn't mean anything, but I'd be okay with that as a one-off match, sure. No problem at all with that.
It'd be a great match.
It's like Kaz Hayashi. You forget guys like, and they've been around for so long, and you forget about them if you were a fan of Japanese wrestling before and you don't watch it now, or just one of those names you saw because of WCW back in the day. And the fact that
Kaz Hayashi and Shuji Kondo are a good team, real good team.
And you think about Hayashi's age. I mean, you think the Monday Night Wars we're talking about, you know, that back in the day, and Hayashi
was a
regular.
He was a young guy then, though. But you're right.
Oh, very young. You know, just came out of being Shiru for the guy was a Toriumon, and was over there as one of Dragon's guys, and ended up being one of the ones that stayed. You know, somebody just were in and out very quickly, but he was in there the whole time. And you know, now it's, you take for granted how good he is as a pro over there. It's like Yuji Nagata, a couple of the other guys, where sometimes you forget how good they are, and for their age, for being around for so long.
Well, Kanemoto too. I mean, not as good. You know, the one you really take for granted is Minoru Tanaka, because he's actually excellent.
Yes, and he's had, you know, the incarnation,
and
I thought,
and
he
Minoru
had
Tanaka. I mean, I remember Minoru Tanaka back in the Rings days. That's a long time ago too.
Very long, very long. I mean, I thought the gig he had is heat. I thought that was incredibly underrated in New Japan at a time where New Japan, like as we talked about a little bit earlier, was sucking wind for a lot of reasons. You know, Liger in that junior heavyweight division was actually, you know, one of the saving graces that you could sit your mind away for a little while. There was still Team CTU and all this sort of other, there was lots of nonsense taking place even with those guys, but they did have a very good run there for a while. And those pay-per-views will be, you know, again, check your local listings for those TNA pay-per-views. Ring of Honor's got one tonight, 7:30 Eastern time from Toronto. They're billing it as Maple Leaf Gardens, the Mattamy Athletic Center. A little bit of a different situation when it comes to the show tonight, in that you're paying Ring of Honor. There shouldn't be too big of an issue. I haven't tried to do this yet, but you're paying through Ring of Honor. You're still watching it on Ustream.
You're watching the Ring of Honor website.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Ring of Honor website, but I guess Ustream's the portal.
I'm just telling you, I'm concerned. I mean, I'm going to watch, and I.
Oh boy.
But I'm concerned because it's the same problem. You know, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about everybody once Ustream drops. You know, I mean, Ustream. You know, they did a great service, but everybody else had hits and misses. I mean, hopefully all goes well.
Which Ring of Honor, as people are more than well aware of, does not have a good reputation of.
Yeah. I hope it goes well. I hope the show's good.
The show's going to be good. The problem is anybody going to be able to see it? Because the show should be freaking fantastic.
Because the Young Bucks and Red Dragon, 2 out of 3 falls. That match will probably be incredible.
That's
and AJ Styles and Adam Cole. That match should be incredible too, right?
Well, that's And look, I mean, for fans, hardcore fans of Ring of Honor, you know, Jay Briscoe, Michael Elgin for the ROH title is, you know, that's going to be awesome. You know, Styles and Cole is something really special, I think, too. You know, Kazarian and Daniels against, you know, Roderick Strong and Jimmy Jacobs. Mark Briscoe against Hansen. You got a four-corner survival match. It's Whitmer and Adam Page against Josh Alexander and Ethan Gabriel Owens against Caprice Coleman and Watanabe against R.D. Evans and Musso Chinaka with Veda Scott. The one change has been Cedric Alexander against Silas Young. Hopefully Silas Young didn't break his leg by running away from his headphones after hearing Stan Hansen with Jim Ross this week. Kind of dismissive of him.
Oh,
well,
I didn't even hear this. What happened?
Oh, so at the end of the interview, I can't remember how it comes up, but it comes up about Stan Hansen, or there's a guy out there, and Jim Ross, I think it was Jim Ross, mentioned Silas Young, and he goes, you know, what do you think about your nephew? And Stan just immediately goes, you know, I don't know who that guy is, and he's using my name on the, you know, on the scene, and, you know, people have asked me, can I use my name, and I told him no. And so it just completely dismissed Silas Young and completely dismissed the any myth out there coming from Stan's side that Silas Young is related to him. So unfortunately, on top of that, Silas Young broke his leg.
But he is hurt, but not a broken leg.
Oh, well, good for him then. And hopefully it's not, hopefully there's no structural tendon damage or something like that that could be even worse sometimes than a broken bone.
He's out for a little while, but it ain't going to be, you know.
And I figure Cedric Alexander's going to get a surprise.
Cedric Alexander's going against Mike Bennett.
Oh, okay, so they already announced that. Well, okay, then that makes complete sense. You get Marie on there too, so that would seemingly make complete sense. Hopefully this works. ROHWrestling.com/iPayPerView is how you order it. And what is it, $14.95? And again,
I think it's $19.99, maybe.
$19.99? Okay, so $19.99. Again, on paper, hopefully they have no issues, because on paper it would be worth the money there. Tomorrow.
The top matches. I mean, it's the top matches will probably be blowaway matches.
Now, I got to figure out what I'm going to do, because I will probably watch Ring of Honor just because I have Fight Pass and I'll always be able to go back to Invicta. But I am really looking forward to Invicta, and hopefully that gets some support. They announced or they aired a little bit of it, obviously, with the Ultimate Fighter 20 coming on here next week. There's going to be a little bit of a focus on women's fighters, and those strawweights that were when they were in Invicta really put on a hell of a show. This show tonight is headlined by the Adam weight, which is 105 pound, or I guess is 105. Michelle Waterson, the minimum weight, straw weight, chicken weight, whatever you want to call it, the smallest weight class they have. It's going to be main evented by her. It was probably, you know, up there as far as now that UFC has got women like Paige VanZant and Tisha Torres and a lot of these other people under contract. One of the most marketable people
she's for Invicta. They've deemed her the star.
Yeah, I mean, she's the biggest thing that they have left, and the most clutch thing to build around, because, again, most of the women that they have were the 115-pounders, and they had a ton of them, but almost to a woman, they're all over in the UFC, and that's not a bad thing, because they're going to be obviously going back and forth, but it really, as far as a promotional thing to get people, you know, hey, why, give me a reason to watch this on Fight Pass, they've got a little bit of an uphill battle, but that's going to be taking place, and we will see, and you'll be able to, I guess, find out, hopefully, relatively quickly, if this does well?
There's no way of knowing.
Okay, this isn't going to be like when it comes to the like Conor McGregor and the whole thing.
Look, if it does Conor McGregor numbers, I guarantee you I'll know. But it's not doing Conor McGregor numbers.
Okay, I wasn't sure if there was like the Faber the WEC pay per view from years back, where it's like, I wonder where the expectations truly at or are at for this.
I haven't even heard expectations. This is a total experiment. This is the first time UFC has ever promoted somebody else's show. I mean, because they own WEC, so that doesn't count.
And they do fund Invicta because of what they've had to do with the trade-offs, but it's not like they outright own it.
They don't own Invicta. They're paying them a licensing fee for the rights to broadcast the show, which Invicta, you know, needed. And Invicta was waited about as long as they could to get, you know, they were trying to get on Showtime, and there was talk of it. And I think that what ended up happening, you know, as Steven Espinoza, who runs Showtime, I think that they really wanted to invest their money in boxing. And obviously they did with Floyd. And I think that they came to the conclusion that with the Bellator ratings and things like that, that there's maybe too much MMA on the air, so there's no need for more MMA. If they didn't come to that conclusion, Invicta probably would have been the way they would go. And if they would have paid Invicta, you know, even one fourth, one fifth what they paid Strikeforce, everybody would be happy forever. Because, you know, Invicta, the costs of doing an Invicta show are not that high. The pay scale is not that high. I don't know if they would break even with one fourth of what they, but it'd be close. They probably would break even, actually, I would think. But the fact is that this did not happen, and they waited, you know, for a long time. The pay-per-view didn't work out. It couldn't, you can't do pay-per-view without television. I don't even know.
No, and they were good shows too, but you know what? They had an issue with one, and the other thing is nobody, unless you went to MMA sites, nobody knew it was taking place.
Yeah. So, but you can't do pay-per-view without television. And you know, you may not even be able to do pay-per-view with television if you're a lot of people. Obviously, as we can tell by Bellator not doing another pay-per-view anytime soon. Or TNA, who has television, and you know, they're cutting way back on pay-per-views.
I'm really surprised Bellator is taking that approach to not have one a year.
Well, maybe they will. They never said they weren't going to, other than they're not doing anything now. So I think down the line they want to build the company to where they do it. But I mean, they did 100,000 for that last one, but obviously that wasn't enough because, you know, I guess it's not enough.
Which I tell you, if you're the pay-per-view industry.
It was a testament to Rampage that they did that number.
I'm being derelict in my duties because I didn't even bother to look. I mean, DirecTV created that bare knuckle board, the BK boxing, whatever it is, where they're basically fighting in a pit, where they have this, you know, this ring set up where they put that on pay-per-view. And it's like, you know, 100,000 should be very welcomed by the industry, I would think.
Oh, I can't imagine that doing anything close to that. They had no TV either.
No, I mean, God, I mean, that to me is one of those, like, if it did 10,000...
That's what I'm thinking. Well, Glory had TV and did nothing.
Yeah, and that's right, for the kickboxing show. And they had sponsorship. They actually had that thing, and granted, it wasn't much. It was C-level as far as how it was put out there in the market, but they actually even had, in theory, crossover promotion for that.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, again, Bellator probably will do one down the line. I'd be very surprised if they didn't. And again, just because they maybe end up getting begged sooner or later by the industry, you know, because you have Floyd fights, you got Broner coming up, but you have very few fights that people really want to pay for. And WWE Network and that whole thing, you know, they're going to be trying to create content and look for content. I would figure if they still want to try to hold on to this, keeping the business model the way they have it, the way that they do. I didn't get a chance to see NXT yet either, but
yeah, I haven't seen either. But Kent is going to be on the show Thursday.
That's the thing. Should be noted that that's the biggest thing is Kent is going to go ahead and debut on there. I know they had an interview with Fergal Devitt on one of the many WWE web things, but any clue on when Devitt looks like he could be able to start?
Very soon.
Okay,
but I don't know a day. No.
Yeah, so, you know, again, I don't know how much they were trying to do with him or anything like that, but I think it's probably been significant time. WWE this weekend, I'll be going to one of the shows in Salisbury, Maryland.
Oh, Salisbury, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, they're going to be in Hampton tonight. The other crew is the Cena-led crew is in Dayton, Ohio. Will be in State College, Pennsylvania before landing in Baltimore for the Jerry Springer season premiere episode of Raw that will take place, battling two football games that are not great on paper, but there's still two football games, including
the New York market.
Yeah, so it's going to be, it is what it is, and I can prepare. Hopefully, it's got to be better than last week's show, because you'd almost have to do that by accident, but hopefully it's not so heavy on the nonstop BS, you know, NFL jokes and just the beating over the head that will probably take place. And just I'm hoping WWE has mercy on it.
I don't know that it's a good idea for them to keep telling people there's an NFL game on ESPN right now. No.
Especially when you're not giving him any reason to stay with some of the S that's been on there, including the Total Diva stuff, which, you know, people think it's E and they're making him do it. They had time to plan something better than this.
They have to do it, but they don't have to do it this bad.
Yeah. Period. Just bad. I don't know. Is that what you got? Anything else going on, Dave?
Pretty much it. That covers everything. We got big next couple days. So we'll see.
Man, I don't know.
Total Divas debuts Sunday night. If you haven't heard that, so that's another thing.
Brian will go back to watching it now, but He'll be doing the show with I would assume with Vinny and Craig on Sunday night. I don't know what the plan is for tomorrow night.
Me and Brian will be covering Ring of Honor and Invicta.
Okay, perfect. And Brian and I are probably going to do a tape delay or a tape recorded earlier version on Sunday, obviously. Either that or Bix will probably be back or something like that. But I think we're going to record ahead of time a little bit so I can make it to Salisbury by 5 to see that show and take my kid to that show. So, Dave, I want to thank you very much for being on here. And I want to thank everybody for listening to us. And we will talk to you again after a while.